Okay, Parsha Chalotza. Now, this Parsha is jam-packed with important laws and stories. From the second half of this Parsha on, a lot of Sefer Bamidbar is stories. Vayikra, which we've just done, is a lot of halacha, a lot of ideas relating to the Mishkan, obviously, and the Levium and Kedushas HaMachaneh. But from the second half of Balotza on, we have a lot of stories, all those big stories, starting in this week's Parsha, the story of the complaining against the Mun, and the Slav, and the 70 Nevi'im, and the Lashon Hara, and the Meraglim, and Korach, and all of that, okay? What we must do first, just for a couple of minutes, is go through the sequence of the stories prior to, you know, the middle of Balotza and after the middle of Balotza. The middle going to be, not the exact middle, but those two psukim, surrounded by nuns, by Ibn Soa Ha'aron. Now, we did speak about by Ibn Soa Ha'aron in the past, and it's not going to be the subject of our class today. However, go online. That idea is an idea from Moshe Shapiro based on the Arizal, Maral, a beautiful idea of Vayibin Soa, but it's not today's topic. Before Vayibin Soa and after Vayibin Soa, you feel like you're in two totally different dimensions. The sequence of the Parsha is the following. You might call what the Torah is busy telling us before Vayibin Soa as the wrapping up operations. Don't forget, we just finished Sefer Vayikra. We spoke all about the Mishkan and all the halachas relating to the Mishkan. Karbanos and Kohanim and Leviim and Kedusha and the old types of Kedusha and Tum and Tara. We just went through an entire Sefer of that. Why are we so involved with the Mishkan? Because as soon as Moshe came down with the second Luchos, at the end of Shemos, right, in Kisisa, really, at the end of the story of the Egel, Moshe came down with the second Luchos, it was Yom Kippur, and immediately afterwards they had the mitzvah of building the Mishkan. The whole point of the Mishkan was to restore the divine presence into the midst of Klal Yisrael. Because remember, after the Egel, Moshe took the Ohel Moed and moved it out of the camp. This is very important. After they sinned with the Egel and Moshe broke the Luchos, a lot of things happened. A lot of things happened. The Luchos were destroyed. The Tsuva. In a sense, the marriage, as we said, was over. The Anane HaKavod abandoned Klal Yisrael. That was not pleasant. Then Moshe took the Ohel Moed where Hashem would speak to him and moved it out of the Machaneh. In other words, how many ways can you say, I'm not with you, I am abandoning you, the Shekhinah is not among you? But then Hashem said to Moshe, after Moshe petitioned for the second Luchos, for Slicha, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to agree to dwell with Klal Yisrael in a state of Tumah, in a state of sin, Moshe Hashem agreed, gave most of the 13 Midas HaRachamim, which we place in a sense the Hashem's bris that he made in the Aseret HaDibros. Remember the Aseret HaDibros? Hashem said, Kelkana, I'm a jealous God, I will not tolerate Avodah Zarah, I will punish you, I will punish your children, I will not bear your sin. Remember all that? As was eventually experienced after the Chedah Egel, when Hashem, in a sense, threw Klal Yisrael off. And then Moshe petitions for the second Luchos, receives the 13 Midas HaRachamim, which replace those threats. Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum, Vachanan, Erech Apayim. Hashem agrees to dwell with Yisrael in a state of mercy, state of sin. And then Hashem says to Moshe, now build me a Mishkan, V'shachanti B'socha, and I'll come back. And I'll dwell among you as long as you have a Mishkan. As long as you have a place to run to, a core, a nucleus of Kedusha in your center, I'll stay with you. I'll dwell among you, even though you're not perfect. So they get busy building the Mishkan, and they do it successfully, and that's where we're up to. Now the Mishkan is built. So now what's the next order of business? The next order of business is to finish up the last minute things, the last tie up the loose strings, and then travel directly to Eretz Yisrael, 11-day journey from where they were to Har Sinai, which they still are Har Sinai, to Eretz Yisrael. By the way, modern scholarship seems to think that Har Sinai, unlike what we assumed, which is that it was in what we call the Sinai Desert, seems to be southeast of Eretz Yisrael, more like Saudi Arabia. Midyan seems to be on the borders of Saudi Arabia. Haramaria seems to be there. And it's an 11-day journey from there up into Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so here are... Har Sinai. Now, here are the loose strings that are being wrapped up in the beginning of Baal Oscha. Here are the topics. The Chanukah HaMenorah, which is, we're going to speak about Aaron. Aaron's job, in a sense, is to keep the menorah lit. That was his unique responsibility. We'll talk about Aaron and his contribution to Klal Yisrael, which is always associated with the Aaron, and the Anane HaKavod. They were B'zchus Aaron. So Aaron, we go back, we discuss Aaron, his role as the one who keeps the menorah lit. Then we talk about the dedication of the Levium, that is called the Chanukah HaLevium. The Torah tells Moshe how he will initiate them for their service, which is about to start, because the Mishkan is built. Pesach Sheni is discussed here. Why all of these things are put together is another discussion. Then the Torah speaks about the Aron, how it would start to move. They'd lift up the Aron would travel, they'd follow it, then the Aron would rest, they would rest. Basically, how it's going to work, how they're going to travel, based on the Aron. Then they talk about the Chatzotzos, how they have to build these trumpets that will be the instruments they use to inform Klal Yisrael that the Aron is moving and it's time to go. Then they go over the way the camp is set up, three shvatim on each side with the flags, and how they would move in a particular order. And then finally Moshe goes over to Yisro, asks him to please join them. They're about to travel. Yisro declines, and then it says here that they started to move. They started to move pas Perek Yud. Perek Yud, Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Vayisu Mehar Hashem. They started to travel from the mountain of God, that's Har Sinai. Derech Shaloshes Yamin, 3 days travel. Va'aron Bris Hashem, and the Aron with the covenant of Hashem. No Seah Lifnehem. Derech Shaloshes Yamin was 3 days ahead of them traveling. Lasur Lahem Menucha to kind of set up the way for them. Va'anan Hashem Aleim Yomam, and the cloud was above them during the day. V'nasam Min HaMachaneh, when they traveled out of the camp. They're moving. They're on the move. Then you have Ahiben Soah Ha'aron, and when the Aron would travel, Moshe would say, scatter your enemies, let those that hate you disperse. In other words, the Aron was going to travel before them, everyone else would fall out, all the enemies, all the people that were against us would just put down their arms, surrender, we'd march through, settle in Eretz Yisrael. That would be the story. That was about to happen. We're on the brink, we're on the move. And then it would be that after the whole story of the conquest and the settlement, Moshe would say, "Benucho, Yomar," when the Aron would finally come to rest, "Shuvah Hashem, now Hashem, you can rest on the multitudes of Klal Yisrael." But what happened? We're moving, we're on the way, and all of a sudden, from this point on, through the rest of Baal Oscha and the rest of the whole Sefer Bamidbar, everything gets undone. Everything unravels. It goes from bad to worse. Until this generation never even makes it into Eretz Yisrael. Basically what's happening is, Vayehi ben Soah is separating the Yotzei Mitzrayim, the people that left Mitzrayim, with those that will enter Eretz Yisrael. Two different generations. And it was never supposed to be like that. Chazal say that if those that had left Mitzrayim and seen Kabbalah Satorah and seen the Nisim in the Midbar and seen the Nisim on the Yam, if they had been the same people to enter Eretz Yisrael, it would have been a whole different story. But it wasn't the same generation. These two psukim really separate between the Yotzei Mitzrayim and those that come into Eretz Yisrael. So what happens? That's our question. And if you look at all the problems that begin to happen now, you see they all have a common theme, and it's shocking when you realize what it is. And it goes to the fundamental core of how do we live? What is going to be our journey through history? Is it going to be more like the beginning of Baal Oscha, or is it about the end of Baal Oscha? How are we going to move through history? How are we going to travel? We thought we were going to travel with the Aron in front of us, scattering our enemies, basically living al pines, but in the end, that's not how we traveled. We traveled a whole different way, and we're still traveling. Here's the stories after the Vayehi ben Soah. First, if you look in the Chumash, It's a vague type of condemnation, Perek Yud Aleph. Vayhi ha'am kim misonanim, and the people were like complainers. They were complaining. Ra ba'aznei Hashem, and to God himself in God's ears, and Hashem heard, vayichar apo, and his temper flared, and a fire burned among them, and ate at the ketzeh, the borders of the machaneh. At the sides, at the limits of the machaneh, vayitzakam el Moshe, they come running to Moshe, he prays, and the fire subsides. So we don't know this in here, but there's a couple of hints. The hint is that it's Gaznei Hashem. Hashem is infuriated. And the hint is that Vayichar Apo. Now you know the rule already by Vayichar Af. Whenever the Torah says Charon Af, we're always speaking about Avodah Zarah. Exactly. Because Charon Af is imagery. Hashem has no nose. But think about this. When a person is so angry that their nostrils flare, that is kind of giving you the impression of an exhale. Right? A bull, you know.
Smoke
coming out, the dragons breathing out fire, all of that, fury and anger. Well, we know about the reverse of when you inhale through the nose, right? We've been speaking about this. Vayipach ba'apo nishmas chayim, Hashem blew the neshama through the nose. Whenever you get the imagery of charon af, of expelling, in anger, what you're really hearing is that Hashem is telling Klal Yisrael, because Hashem, everything is about us. Hashem doesn't breathe or not breathe, get angry or not get angry. It's all messages to us. It's talking about us. Every time it gives HaKadosh Baruch Hu an emotion or an action, it's referring to Klal Yisrael. Okay? Like when it says, Vayered Hashem, Hashem came down, it means Klal Yisrael perceived more. Doesn't mean anything about Hashem. So when it says that Hashem was angry and exhaling, what that means is Klal Yisrael were in danger of losing their neshama. It was being blown out of them. In reverse of the neshama being blown into them. That only happens by Avodah Zarah. That happens by Avodah Zarah. When they turn away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they reject the Torah that they just accepted. Chazal say, what really happened here, because Chazal brings this down, is that the sin of misonanim is a sin of precus ol, throwing off the yoke that they just accepted at Sinai, which is also alluded to, as you know, by Yisu, and they traveled Mehar Hashem from the mountain of God. Chazal say here, Ketinok Haboreach Mibeit HaSefer, like a child who can't wait to get away from school where they have the responsibility. So the misonanim here is there's something about it which implies that they were yearning to reject the yoke that they received, that they accepted a little while back. Okay? That it was weighing too heavily on their shoulders. And they were resisting it. That's number one. Klal Yisrael were resisting, not the whole Klal Yisrael, elements of Klal Yisrael, but things have a way of seeping through, you know, from the top down or from the bottom up. And eventually Klal Yisrael, a fire breaks out, and some people are caught up in it. And the Torah is telling us that there's already a resistance to the yoke that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has placed upon them and then they have received. Okay? The next event is much more clear-cut. The asafsof, asher bekirbo. Interesting words. The ones that were gathered in, that were in the bekerev, in the midst of Klal Yisrael, those that were gathered in from the outside, the erev rav, or even in Klal Yisrael themselves, the desires that come from the outside found themselves, wormed their way into the essence, the core, and they started complaining a bit against the Mun, and the Torah specifically says, Hisavu Tava, they wanted a Tava. They wanted to have a feeling of desire. They were living on a Madrega, we're going to see, that there was no desire. There was no more Tava, and they wanted Basar, and they start complaining against the Mun, and we've spoken about this too in the past, a couple of times. But they're breaking away from the yoke. They want taiva. They want to feel that they're alive. You know, eating meat is associated with physical pleasure in a sense of, you know, we say flesh. And they start complaining. They say in Pasuk Vav, our nefesh is dried out. You know the word nefesh now. the nefesh, the body, the chomer. It's all dried out. There's no excitement. There's no drive. There's no enthusiasm. We're eating the man. What kind of food was the man? The man was entirely spiritual. They never went to the bathroom. It was whatever they wanted it to be. It was kavana food. Whatever you had kavana, that's what it was. It was all in the seichel. It was all in their head. It was nothing physical. And they can't take it. And the Torah goes ahead and defends the man. We're not going to go into this. What we're going to focus on is Moshe's response. He says, how come, Moshe Pasuk Yud Aleph, Lama Hare Osa La'avdecha, how come you've been so bad to me? What are you doing to me? This is an affront against me. I haven't found favor in your eyes. You are causing me to endure something because you obviously don't like me. You've put the burden of this, I haven't found favor, so to speak. You've put the burden of this nation upon me. Was I pregnant with them? Did I conceive them? Did I give birth to them? You tell me to carry them like a nursing mother carries a suckling child. And then Moshe says something strange in Pasuk Yud Gimel. May I in Li Basa? Where do I don't have meat. Where am I going to get meat? What kind of funny question is that? I mean, what is going on? If Klai Yisrael want meat, what is Moshe getting involved? As if it's his fault. That he can't, it's not, he's saying it's not my fault. Where am I going to get meat for them? Why do I have to deal with this? What is this, right? So this is an attack. Moshe certainly sees it as an attack against him personally. Part of the solution is the slav, but part of the solution is, Moshe says, this nation, these people are too much for me to bear. He kaved me many. They're too much. Pasuk Yudalid. I can't alone. Lo uchal anochi levadi lefeisos kol ha'am hazeh. Now why here? Why specifically here does Moshe start and saying, I can't deal with this whole nation? It's not me alone is just not enough. What is happening here? And the solution is that Moshe picks 70 people who are going to be Nevi'im, and he's going to extend, in a sense, imagine one candle and you light 70 candles off of it, extend Moshe's Nevuah to more people than this. And they will help him. And then that Yoshua gets all upset. This is interspersed with the story of the Slav, of the Slav coming. Yoshua gets all upset about the fact that these 70 Nevi'im start the prophecy, and two people are prophesying in the camp. Two people were prophesying, Pasuk Chavav, Yish'aru Shnei Anashim B'machana, Eldad U'Meidad, and they have Ruach Hashem on them, and they did not, V'lo Yatsu Ohela, and they did not, those are very important words, they didn't go out to the tent, V'yisnabu B'machana, they were giving Nevuah in the Machana, and he runs and he tells Moshe on them, and he says, good, I'm not jealous. Everybody should be Nevi'im. Hashem should give his Ruach upon everybody. And this is a strange little episode. What is that there also? They're afraid that these two people are not going to the tent. They're prophesizing in the Machaneh. Moshe's happy about it. Then, of course, the Slav come. A lot of people die, and the place is called, in Pasuk Lamed Daled, Kivros HaTava, the cemetery, the burial place of those that desire. Immediately after this, Miriam speaks Lashon Hara on Moshe. Now, these two are totally connected. Miriam's Lashon Hara is totally connected to the previous story. And we have to discuss her Lashon Hara in general. What happens here? So here's the progression. First, they want to break out of the yoke that they received at Har Sinai. Then they say, we also can't take them on. It's too ruchnius. It's too much ruchnius. The man, by the way, was b'schus Moshe. The man is b'schus Moshe. It's too much ruchnius. It's food that doesn't satisfy our physical bodies. We have no sense of physically being alive, of having that drive and that sense of vitality, that that physical sense of life. We don't feel it. We're living on a madrega where our what's sustaining us is our thoughts, our machshava, our das. This is Dor Dea, the door of the midbar, the door to receive the Torah. We can't take it. And then, in addition to this, Moshe says, this isn't working. I can't satisfy them. I need more Nevi'im. Hashem gives more Nevi'im. Because there are now more Nevi'im prophesizing than Moshe, so then, this leads directly to Miriam's comment, because what happened? So Chazal tells the following. Tzipora hears about the fact that 70 people got Nevuah, and that Eldad U'Meidad among them are unique in their prophesying above and beyond everybody else. So Yocheved, Tzipporah, Moshe's wife, says, I nebuch on their wives. Because now that these people are prophesying continuously and not stopping, which is what the Pasuk says, they'll have to separate from their wives. So Miriam hears this and says, what are you talking about? I'm a Nevi'ah. I am a Nevi'ah before Moshe was born. I've had Nevi'ah more longer than Moshe and Aaron. I also get Nevi'ah and I'm not separated from my spouse. Are you telling me Moshe and you are not living together? Which is what Tzipporah really kind of exposed, that. So Miriam didn't agree with this, obviously, and she tells Aaron, you know, what's going on with Moshe? Why is he doing this? Okay? Now, calling it Lashon Hara is a little harsh. It's more like she loved Moshe. She put her life on the line for Moshe. She saved Moshe. It was more like questioning Moshe's motivations. Questioning Moshe, really. Questioning his right to make that decision on behalf of him and Tzipporah. Now, my grandfather brings down from Rav Hirsch that when it says that Yisro came back with Tzipporah after Moshe went to Mitzrayim to free the Jews, he came back to the Midbar with Tzipporah. So he brings down that Moshe only remarried her al menas, on the condition, because it says twice, Isha Hakushas Asher Lakach, Ki Isha Kushas Lakach, Perak Yudbeis Pasuk Aleph, that Miriam spoke to Aaron about the Isha Kushas, the woman from Kush that he took. Because he took a woman from Kush. He says Lakach twice. From here we learn that he married her Lakach, Lakuchin, that's a term for marriage, twice, the first time. And the second time when he took her back, when Yisro brought her, it was on the condition, no ona, no physical relations, because he would have to be prepared to speak to Hashem at all times. So they didn't know this. They didn't know that Moshe had an agreement with Tzipporah in the second Lakuchin, the second marriage, that this would not, it would not be a normal marriage. Okay? So now they understand that Moshe did this, and they think Moshe's gone a little bit too far. He's a little bit machmir, which is what led to their speaking. Again, this is an assault on Moshe, right? And then comes right after this, the Meraglim, which is also an assault on Moshe in the end, and they associate, Chazal associate with Miriam not being done the kapschos on Moshe, and the Meraglim not being done the kapschos on what they saw in Eretz Yisrael, right? And in the end, it becomes an affront against Moshe. Then they end up languishing in the desert, so Korach gets annoyed, and he attacks Moshe. So from the beginning to the end, everything that happens after Vayhi ben Soa is a repudiation of what Moshe has done and is doing for Klal Yisrael. All of this is against Moshe, if you think about it. They want to throw off the yoke that they accepted on themselves because Moshe brought them Har Sinai. They complain against the Mon, which is an affront against Moshe. As we said now, the Mon is the Chos Moshe. Then more Nevi'im are put in place. Because of that, they say, well, Moshe's not so different than the rest of us. Why is he acting different? Then they say, you brought us out here to die in the desert because you really can't bring us into Eretz Yisrael, and they all start crying, and that's the Meraglim, and then Korach. Okay. So what is going on here? And yes, we're going to look at it from Miriam's perspective, because Miriam is the one who knows Moshe the best, and she herself is in disagreement with Moshe. So we have to find out what is the core here of the disagreement between Moshe and Miriam. What is Miriam not liking? And not just that he left Tzipporah. There's something much deeper. Why did he leave Tzipporah? Why did he do that? And when we understand where Moshe is coming from, we will understand all of these stories in a new way. Okay, so now this is a gift from my husband, because I certainly didn't do this on my own. So here we're going to get into something very technical and lundish, okay? Very technical and very nuanced. Well, let's go slowly. So, you know the Shulchan Aruch. So there's a section in the Shulchan Aruch called the Evan Ezer. And in the Hakdama, there's a Perish called the Beis HaShmuel, and this is the Hakdama, the introduction to the Perish called Beis Shmuel on this section of Shulchan Aruch. Now, he says the following, and so this is his idea of the Beis Shmuel. He says that the following, Moshe only received Nevuah during the day. Now that is very important. Okay? The fact that Moshe received Nevuah during the day helps us understand what was going on, because the halacha is the following. Why should a Navi not be able to be with their wife? Okay? So the halacha is the following. If a man and wife are together, and we don't live in the time of Tum and Tar anymore, so we're not familiar with these halachas. We're getting a little technical here. If a woman and man are together, so there's a form of tumma associated with that, okay? A man who is involved with his wife is tumma. So imagine if it's a kohen who can eat from kachim, karbanos, is allowed to be with his wife, is allowed to be married. But the next morning, if they're together, he is tumma. So he goes to the mikvah. Now, that person who goes to the mikvah in the morning, early in the morning, is called, the technical phrase is, a tevul yom. Someone who was tovil in the daytime, a tevul yom. Now, the halacha with a tevul yom, someone who's tovil in the morning, is they are not tummy for the purposes of making other people tummy. Okay? However, if the person's a kohen, we're talking about kohanim here, they cannot eat from karbanos. They cannot eat from something that was on the mizbeach, therefore dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, elevated in status, something that's kodesh, mufrash, separated, bin on the mizbeach, bin dedicated to Hashem. They cannot eat from the karbon until nightfall. That is the halacha of a tevul yom. They don't make other people tummy. They are not technically in a state of tumma, but they cannot eat from a karbon, from kodshim, until the nighttime. They cannot partake of something that's already on a higher madrega. They can't have an attachment to something that's on a higher madrega till the nightfall. Which means there has to be a whole period of separation from their tumah state to the state of kedusha. It doesn't just switch you off in 5 minutes. I'm tumah, went to the mikvah, now I'm tahar. It's not like that. There's a whole period of waiting, elevation, separation, and then they can eat from something that was on the mizbeach. What he says here is that Moshe added three mitzvahs, so to speak, on his own. Moshe did three things on his own, in the sense that Hashem was maskim to, that Hashem didn't ask him to do. Those three things were the following. Adding that third day of Shloshes Yimei Hagbalah, right? You probably have heard about this, and we'll discuss it in more depth, explain what that means. Breaking the Luchos, which the last Rashi in the whole Torah says, Yashar Koach Shashibarta, was the right thing to do. And separating from Miriam. These were his own Tipora. These were his own initiatives. He wasn't compelled to do these things. Okay? Hashem was maskim on all three. Gave the Torah after the third day. Told Moshe Yashar Koach. And defended Moshe here with Miriam and Aaron and said he's different. Hashem was maskim on all levels. However, Moshe did these on his own. So, Beis Shmuel says the following. Moshe's relationship to the Torah, Moshe's approach to the ability to receive Torah, was the same way we understand the concept of a tevul yom, not being able to eat from kachim till the nighttime. Because by the luchos, Moshe made a kal v'chomer. By the luchos, Moshe said the following. Just like a ben necha, someone who's oved avodah zara, a mumar, okay, a Jew who is a mumar, who doesn't believe in a kadosh baruch hu, and is somehow veering off to avodah zara, is not allowed to eat from a karban, in this case called Pesach. So Moshe said, how could Klal Yisrael then, who are oved avodah zara, accept the luchos? I have to break them. What's the kal v'chomer here? Just like someone who's oved avodah zara can't eat from a karban, so Klal Yisrael, who are just oved avodah zara in some nuanced way with the egel, can't receive the Torah. So the Torah is analogous or synonymous with a karban, right? The Torah is like a karban, and if you're oved avodah zara, you can't eat from the karban. You're tamei. If you're oved avodah zara, you can't eat from the karban. If you have an egel, you can't have the Torah. Moshe is looking at the Torah as like a karban that's been on a mizbeach, like kodshim, which means to say, Moshe is looking at the Torah in the following light. the only people that can receive the Torah are people that are not just not tummy, because they went in the mikvah, but 5 minutes ago they were tummy. People that are totally separated from tumah, that are parush, they're on a higher level, that it's not even the same day anymore, it's already the next day. They're disconnected completely from tumah. They have no connection to tumah. They're parush. They're separated. They're transcendent. The only people who can be makabel Torah are people who have separated from this world and the tum of this world and the normal life of this world and the tava, the desires of this world. Only those people can really grasp the Torah, and only those people can really, you know, have the Torah grow inside of them and be connected to Torah. That's what Moshe is saying. Is that clear so far? It's the same concept with adding the third day. Nobody realizes this. Moshe added the third day for women, only for the women. Because, listen to this. The halacha is, without getting too gross and too technical, that after a man and woman are together, okay, the woman is tameh the day of their union, that's day one, the next day, and the third day in the morning she goes to the mikvah. Okay? So, because after they're together, they're still like a discharge for up to the third day. Then she goes, so there's a certain form of tumah. In those days, as we said, there is a lot of tumah and tara stuff that we are no longer familiar with, way beyond nida. Had to do with coming to the Beis HaMikdash and all of that, and eating from truma if you're a bas kohen, and eating from the karbanas. So, the morning, Mo Hashem said, be prepared today, tomorrow, and the third day I'll give you the Torah. So the third day, the women would go to the mikvah in the morning. It's nothing to do with the men. They'd go to the mikvah in the morning. What would that make them? Tevul yom. So they're not mitama other people. But lahalacha, can a tevul yom eat from a karbon? No. According to Moshe, what's the Torah? Like a karbon that you have to be totally tahar for? Completely separated from your tumah, not connected to it at all. Not, it's the same day, 5 minutes ago today I was tameh, then I went to the mikveh, now 5 minutes later today I'm tahor. You have to wait till the whole day passes. You have to be in another sphere. You have to be in a whole new place. So Moshe said, no, they shouldn't receive the Torah in the status of a tevul yom. The Torah is so removed, so kadosh, that the people, the women who are receiving the Torah, have to be already in a much higher madriga. The next day Moshe extended it a whole nother day, so that the women would not be tevul yom. Is that clear so far? Second thing he added. The third thing he added is that he separated from Tzipora. Now we said that Moshe got nevuah during the day, which was what Hashem tells Miriam, not in a dream, not like everybody else sleeping at night in a dream. Moshe received nevuah during the day. So, if he was married, so in the morning he goes to the mikvah that makes him a tevul yom, is he allowed to receive nevuah? Yes, he is allowed. He personally is allowed to receive nevuah. Everybody else was. Miriam was. The other Nevi'im was. What did he say? He said, no, the Torah that I receive is in the madrega of like the karbanos. It's on a whole nother madrega. It's been dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's parish from this world. I'm not receiving nevuah in that state. I'm receiving nevuah in the next level, separated completely. So since he received nevuah during the day, he not at night, he would always be in the, if he was with Tzipora, he'd always be in the status of a tevul yom. That was not good enough. So all three things that Moshe instituted were because, the Beis Shmuel says, he understood that Torah is from a different dimension. It is not part of the day-to-day life of this world. It's not part of the ongoing Tumah, Tara, and Torah all together, Mitzvahs and Averus and Torah and Tumah, everything mixed in together. He understood that Torah is from another sphere, elevates a person beyond this world, to a place of total kedusha, total what Moshe had asbaklariyim here, a clarity of understanding, dveikus in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the point that the person disengages from this world. That's really Torah. Is Moshe right? Of course Moshe's right. On the highest madrega, that's Torah. By the way, doesn't this sound a lot like what? Huh? No, Hashem. No, Precious, totally, since we're talking, we're relating to Moshe's on the Madrega, as you all know. Adam HaRishon, Perek Aleph, Selam Elokim. right? The miniature Tzelem Elokim, Rashi, Lahazin Ulahaskel, Chochma, Das, Tahara, Perek Aleph, what we've been speaking about. The goal, the destination, the place of where the guf isn't even mentioned, where the nefesh isn't even mentioned. Where the body just is a vehicle to express the desires and the truths that live in a person's mind, which are totally dove, totally connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course that's the highest Madrega. Of course that's the Madrega at the very, very end of history, way beyond Yemos HaMashiach. After Tchiyas HaMesim, the final stage of Olam HaNeshamas, when it's a non-physical world, totally of the Neshama, of the Emes. That's what we've been speaking about, the highest Madrega. But does anybody really live on that level in Perek Aleph of Bereishis?
No,
not really. Really we live, as you know, we spoke about this so often now. In fact, the four shirim on this topic, starting with, if anyone wants to go back on Kedoshim, the four after that, we've been working with this. The real journey is to work through this world. That was Miriam's machlokas with Moshe. Is Torah kodshim, like a carbon that's been on a mizbeach, that can no longer re-enter this world and be eaten in any type of state of tumah. To access Torah, you have to remove yourself. That is certainly the highest madrega, but is that for everybody? Of course not. Miriam, the man we said was bizchus Moshe. What kind of food was the man? The man was entirely ruchnius. They didn't even have to eliminate it. It was according to their maksh. It tasted like what they imagined. It was all from the head. It didn't satisfy their body at all. They were being expected to, they were being raised up to Madrega like Moshe Rabbeinu, but they weren't ready for it. All of the sins that follow the Hidden Soa are like, in a sense, the sin of Adam and Chava and the Geirish, the expulsion from Gan Eden. It's all happening again. First it happens for humanity, and then Klal Yisrael, who start the whole history all over again with one nation, replaces potentially the whole world, go through the same process. But at least we know what the process is. So all of the arguments that they make against Moshe all relate to this. First of all, they start complaining. We said it's avodah zara. They want to break off the yoke. It's too much. They're living on a madrega of miraculousness all the time. That they're in a state of lamala min hateva. They're not living like people. They're not living like human beings. They're punished from this world. Then they start complaining about the man, which is Moshe's, the Chus Moshe, which is totally spiritual in nature. Moshe admits it. He says, I can't give them meat. That's exactly what he says. I am not the right leader for them anymore. I am progressing on my own to a whole different place. And a person has a right to disengage and on their own move to a higher place and leave everybody behind. The person has a right to. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is maskin to all Moshe's changes. He's maskin to separation from Tzipora, which he made an agreement with Tzipora. He's maskin to the third day of Shoshes Megillah. Hashem is maskin. A person has a right to elevate themselves above and beyond everybody else. And Moshe himself says, so I'm not the right leader, so choose other people. I'm no longer, compatible with them. I can't give them meat. I have nothing in me that wants meat. I have no taiva. Not taiva for meat, which is a euphemism for arayas, for sexuality, and I don't have a taiva for that, and punished for my wife. He's on another level. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu does pick up the Nevi'im, and then Miriam says, but where is he going? That's Miriam's machlokas with him. Is Torah meant to be accepted on this Madrega? Or is Torah meant to be accepted here in the real world to live, in a natural way? In other words, shall Moshe limit himself and re-enter the world? By the way, you might say that after Moshe received the second Luchos with the 13 Midas HaRachamim, which was basically a commitment by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to dwell amongst Klal Yisrael in a state of Tumah, in other words, to Hashem, Kel Racham, Vachan, and forgiving. I won't destroy you right away if you sin. I'll let you sin. I'll stay among you. I'll forgive you. I won't, a union of Tumah and Tara all mixed in together. Or V'choshech, like on the first day, Mishtamshim Be'erbuvio, chaotically intermingled. So after that point, which by the way was because Moshe got us the second Luchos, Moshe got us that new agreement. So Miriam could be saying, this is just a suggestion, once we have the second luchos, that's it. Now it's a different arrangement. Now it's not like it was before. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu can dwell with us in a state of tumah, so you too can be, you know, exist more. But Moshe is defended by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Moshe is elevated above and beyond. Now, of course, we have to understand that Moshe, why is Moshe allowed to, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu defends Moshe for existing in this state, despite the fact that it's not everybody's state, despite the fact that it's not what Klal Yisrael could relate to at the beginning of their journey. It's what we get to at the end. Why must Moshe exist in this state? That's really the question. Why must Moshe remain in this state and not re-enter the world like everybody else? Why must Moshe stay different than everybody else, where his relationship to Torah is completely mufrash, totally separated? So in order to understand that, we have to understand the uniqueness of Moshe's nevuah, how it differs from everybody else's nevuah. This is very, very important. So technically, and by the way, my husband wrote a great article a few years ago in the Five Towns and Farakwe Torah Journal about this subject. And the Rambam lists four ways that Moshe's nevuah is entirely different. Here are the four ways. All Nevi'im received nevuah in a dream, which is what Moshe said, what Hashem says here to Miriam. Okay, he says the following. All received in a dream, but not Moshe. Moshe received it fully awake. Here. Here, he says the following. He says, Vayomer Shimu na Devarai. He tells Miriam and Aaron, listen to what I'm telling you now. In the Nevi'achem Hashem, if when you have nevuah, b'mara, you have a vision. I speak to someone in a vision. B'mara elav esvada. I will appear to a person in a vision. B'chalom, or in a dream. B'chalom adababo, or in a dream I'll speak to them. Lo kein avdi Moshe. So first of all, Moshe doesn't get nevuah in a dream. He gets nevuah fully awake. Okay, in a composed state. Second of all other nevi'im receive nevuah through a malach. And therefore, the nevuah is in the form of some type of allegory. It's removed a little bit, or a metaphor. Whereas Moshe receives nevuah directly from Hashem with complete clarity. No symbols or metaphors, and that's what Hashem says also. Tmunas Hashem Yabit. He sees it directly from Yudkei Vavkei. He's not getting some metaphor through, you know, that he has to interpret. He sees Hashem speaks to him during the day, directly tells him what he wants. All of the Nevi'im are overawed and stunned, whereas Moshe was not. He had the mental capacity to comprehend the words of Nevuah, calm and composed and collected. And Hashem says, Pel peh davarbo. I speak to him like in a conversation. He doesn't fall down and have convulsions and go into traumatic seizures, which what the other Nevi'im went into. But I speak to him pel peh, like a conversation. And thirdly, all of the Nevi'im could not achieve Nevuah whenever they wished, but Moshe could speak to Hashem anytime. He could initiate. Just like that. The whole Basi Nemanhu, he's trustworthy, he's in my house, I trust him like a trusted servant, comes and goes at any time. Now Moshe Nevuah was entirely different on these levels, but it has ramifications. The halacha is that a Navi is not allowed to be Mechadish anything new in the Torah. If based in our arguing, if Sanhedrin are arguing on a halacha, and a Navi comes and says, I know the Nevuah, that the halacha is like so and so, such and such, what do they say to the Navi? We don't care. Okay? It goes by majority vote. Remember the famous story? If the halacha is like me, let me do a nace. We don't care about Nisan. We don't care about Nevuah. It goes by majority vote. Whoever can compel us intellectually that their argument is strong enough, that the halacha should be like this, we vote, that's it. Done. A Navi can never be Mechadish, can never initiate or introduce any halacha in the Torah. Is that true for all Nevi'im? Yes, except Moshe. Moshe was Mechadish halacha. Moshe created Torah in his own in a few ways. So what we're saying now is that the difference between Moshe's Nevuah and the Nevuah of everybody else, and the Nevuah of Miriam, and why Moshe's Nevuah was on a whole different madriga, and it had to be, because Moshe's Nevuah was Torah itself. Moshe's Nevuah was not just giving Torah. Moshe's Nevuah, everything Moshe said, even what Moshe said on his own, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was masking to became Torah, which is entirely different than every other Navi. Once your words are Torah, they're not coming from the bottom up. They're coming like from Anarsina, like Gilead, like from the top down. They're coming like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, giving Torah. They're almost, you know, in the sphere of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, being conveyed to Klal Yisrael. And we know Torah on the top of our Sinai, as it was given to Klal Yisrael by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is in a state of total Kedusha. It's in a state of total Kedusha. You cannot tamper with the Torah. The Torah exists in a pristine state of total Kedusha. That's the reality of the Torah. The fact is, when the Jewish people sinned by the Meraglim, when they sinned by the Chet HaEgel, what happened to the sinners? Was Torah watered down to accommodate the low level of the people? No. The people died and Hashem waited for another generation that could raise themselves up to the level of the Torah. The Torah stays above it all. It doesn't accommodate itself to the times. It's always emes. It's always emes. And it does not accommodate itself to the mediocrity of the people. The people will come and go. Those people that will raise themselves up to the madrega of the Torah will have a chelek in it. But the people that won't will remain down here and will not have a chelek in the Torah. The Torah remains perfect. At the same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I allow you to keep the Torah despite the fact that you're tummy. There's no halacha that says if you sinned at 2 o'clock, you're not allowed to learn Torah for 6 hours. You're allowed to learn Torah even in a state of Tumah. That's a chesed HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. But learning Torah and having a chelek in the Torah, making the Torah part of you, integrating it, is not the same thing. Everybody can learn Torah. But what Moshe is teaching us is that in the final analysis, in the place of total truth, a person can only have a chelek in the Torah if when they take what they learn, they integrate it and they raise themselves up to the madrega of the Torah. Then they have a chelek in the Torah. Yes, you can learn the Torah. Hashem will give us the Torah. Hashem will let His Shechina be among us even if and when we sin. But that's what Hashem will do for us. What we do is that's our own bechira, that's our own job, is learn Torah and accept upon ourselves the mitzvahs, the yoke, raise ourselves up and above and beyond, let go, leave behind behaviors, lifestyle, things we want to do, leave them behind, abandon them, elevate ourselves, and live according to the Torah. So what we're speaking about here is, Moshe, of course, has to exemplify that. That he brings us Torah, which is pristine, perfect, untouchable, coming from the top down to us. Moshe's nisim, Moshe's nevuah, Moshe's whole state of being is like Torah itself. And that's why, and because of Moshe we survive. Because of Moshe we have a Torah, and we even have, because of Moshe, the ability, the promise that Hashem will still give us Torah even when we're not perfect. But still, that doesn't change the status of Torah as being beyond us, something we have to raise ourselves up to. Miriam, though, gives us the be'er, the water, the well. The whole concept of the well is very different than the month. The well is water. Where do you take the water from the well and what do you dump it onto? Dirt. Plain old dirt. Afar min hadama. That's man, right? In his real state of being. And what happens when you pour the water on the dirt? Things begin to grow. Makes the dirt fertile. People, regular people that are afar min hadama, dirt of the earth, pour mayim, Torah, the air, the Torah from Shamayim. You know, the water that we pull out of the river originally comes right from the snow-capped mountains. We can't get it when it's in that form. It's inaccessible when it's on the top of the mountains in blocks, sheets of ice. But it begins to, the wind blows and the weather warms and it starts to flow down the mountain and streams and rivers, and then we can get to it. So Miriam is telling us that the water, the Mayim Chayim, the Torah that starts in an elevated and impossible place that most human beings can't climb up to the top of Everest and get there, okay, get to the top, that water will come down to us and we'll take that water and we'll put it on dirt and things will start to grow. People will grow from the bottom up. But that means you still need the remote, you know, you still need the Torah to be understood as perfect, Parush separated, not to be dragged down, something that we have to elevate ourselves and climb up to achieve. That's still the position of the Torah. By the way, this is expressed the second Halalukha after Ashrei. Someone just have a sitter quickly, hold on. Yes. Okay, this is what we say all the time. I think we've actually even mentioned it here, but just to review it, this is really the achdus of what Moshe is doing and what Miriam is doing. By the way, Moshe, Miriam, and Aaron are the shepherds, the three shepherds. So we know Moshe is the man. You need that aspect. You need the perfection, the totally elevated aspect. And Moshe, that was Moshe's derech. You need Miriam. That's going to be the mother, you know, she's the woman, the mother, the source of fertility. And Aaron always represents the protection. The Anan is the protection of Klal Yisrael, helping Klal Yisrael travel through, we don't have time for this now, through the menorah, which always represents Chachma, the Chachma of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the light, which is always Chachma. Maybe we'll speak about that another time, but let me just tell you this quickly to wrap up. The end of the second Halleluka after Ashrei says the following. Here, Hashaleach imraso aretz. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends his words down to the earth. Ad mehera, how quickly does his words, his dibor, dibor is kasha, it's hard, davar, dibor, demands, right? The demands of the Torah, how quickly they run. What is it? Hanosein shele katsamer. He gives snow like wool. Kafar ke'efer yaster. And frost, he scatters it like it looks like dust. I mean, ashes. Like it looks like ashes. Looks like ashes. But it's really frost. Mashlech karcho kefitim. He sends down his ice, his kerach, like pebbles. Like crumbs. He sends his ice, hail, like crumbs. Lifnei karaso miyamo. Because before his kar, the coldness, who can exist? What this is saying is the following. What is this? How does shelek, snow, resemble temer, wool? Hanosein shelek katemer. He sends snow. My grandfather says this, by the way, and it's feel safe. He sends snow like wool. What's the parallel between snow and wool? Are they the same thing? From a distance, a whole bed of wool and a bunch of snow. Does it look somewhat? Yeah, from a distance, it's the same. A little bit. They look the same, but are they the same? No. Snow, blizzards. Okay, the North Pole is inhospitable. You can't live there. But, a bed of wool looks similar, but it's warm and it's cozy. You can do something with it, okay? His ice, his hail, okay, kafur, like ashes. When you see hail, you know, all over the ground, does it look from a distance like ashes, a little gray, dusting the earth? The ashes are innocuous. They don't hurt. They're soft. You walk in them. What about hail? And what about kerach? His ice like crumbs, you know, big sheets of ice, and he sends down his ice until the point it looks like its little crumbs are sprinkled around. What this is saying is, the emes of the Torah is absolute. It's absolute. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu would demand everybody live according to the truth of the Torah, the letter of the law, and the spirit of the law, and with a revelation of the power of the Torah, no human being could survive. It's beyond human beings. So he allows the Torah to reach us in a form that is very innocuous, very pleasant, accessible, like wool, like dust, like ashes, like pebbles, like crumbs. By the time it gets to us, we can work with it. But make no mistake about it, in its true form, its pristine form, it's too much for most people. It's absolute emes. Right, it's Perek Aleph of Bereishis. So what does it say? This is in Lifnei Karaso Miyamo, before his car, the coldness of it, the absolute, you know, it's indicating that something human being is not capable of really surviving with. Who can Miyamo? So Yishlach Devaro. So he sends down his Dibor, which is always his demand. The Yamsein. And it starts to melt slowly from the snow-capped mountains, the sheets of ice, the glaciers. They start to make. Yashev Rucho, his wind starts to blow. Yizlumayim, the water starts to run. And what happens? It runs down to streams and to rivers, and eventually we get to it. Magid Devarov LeYaakov. That's how he tells his words to Yaakov. Yaakov is always Kaito in a lower state, not yet in a state of clarity, of Das, of Yisrael. That's how Hashem brings his word to us. Chukav u'mishpatav l'Yisrael. That's how he brings his chukim, which are already higher, mishpatim, to Yisrael. The Goyim don't have this privilege. In other words, we understand that. We understand that Torah is in its truest form like Moshe Rabbeinu understood it. We also understand that like Miriam understood it, it has to be accessible, be able to, you know, nourish regular people who are afa min ha'adama. This was really the machlokas between Moshe and Aaron in the end, Moshe and Miriam. In the end, HaKadosh Baruch was maskim to Moshe's decision. He said, B'chol Beisi, and with this end, B'chol Beisi Ne'emanhu. In my whole house he is Ne'eman. Now what does that mean? He is trustworthy? But HaKadosh Baruch was saying, no Navi is allowed to be Mechadosh HaHalacha. But I trust Moshe. Moshe is so elevated, so connected to Torah, that his words become Torah. And I'm asking, I agree to them. I rubber stamp them. He is totally trustworthy that when Moshe speaks, it's almost like HaKadosh Baruch himself is speaking. So that is the leader that we had. That is the Madrega that Moshe, you know, existed on. And because of that, the Torah that Moshe has given us has existed till today. That's why we're learning Torah's Moshe. That's why we trust Torah's Moshe. That's why we look at the. That's why HaKadosh Baruch himself said, "Take my Torah and call it on your name." Right? We don't call Torah Hashem. I mean, we do sometimes, but Hashem himself calls it Zichru Torah Moshe Avdi. Hashem says you can call the whole Torah on your own name. That's how much I trust Moshe. So that the one who brought us Torah is already, in a sense, elevated. He's almost from a HaKadosh Baruch Hu's vantage point giving us Torah, and yet you still need Miriam. You still need Miriam to bring to Klal Yisrael the other, the reality, which is the fact that all of, every human being has to come to Torah, to get Torah from the bottom up. So they were, both of them, as we said, the shepherds, considered the Roan, some of the Roan of Klal Yisrael. So, in any case, this is a dichotomy we live with. We work on both levels. Good luck.